Welcome to Charter School Conversations, a weekly podcast for the Utah charter school community. I'm your host, Gina James, with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. We'll do a little board training, have conversations with charter school leaders, and touch on issues that affect us all. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. We are excited to offer another training with Joylyn Lincoln, who is the Director of Training with the Utah Association of Public Charter Schools. She is a former teacher. She is a current charter school board member, a lover of all policy, and general expert of all things charter schools and policy. And she's in a really good mood today because she has been working with policies this morning.
I got to write a policy training. It just made my day happy.
So that's good. She started off early and we are hitting on a really important topic. Again, we think all of our topics are very important, but this one is great. And we are here to talk about Robert's Rules. And an interesting thing, I don't know if you know this, Joylyn, where the term Robert's Rules comes from.
No, I've never delved into where it comes from. Tell.
Well, I like to have a little background because why do we do things we do? I like to know. A U.S. Army officer, General Henry Martin Robert, in 1876, wrote down rules and procedures that he adapted from Congress for non-legislative bodies that are governed by a board of directors.
So, I think he probably did that to make sure that the one board member, you know, that one board member that talks the whole time doesn't get to monopolize the meeting.
I think you're right. And to keep a process. So let's talk about that. Why are Robert's Rules so important?
They give your board formality and they allow the conversation to run smoothly. It gives you a rule of order and make sure everybody has a chance to talk.
Because it is important for everyone's voice to be heard. And so to have a structure so that can happen and that one person doesn't dominate the conversation. So we're going to delve into the exciting world of Robert's Rules, of what some of the basics are, some of the lesser known rules that we can use, some of Joylyn's favorite motions, and then basically how it works, how it all works together. Let's talk about just the basics of Robert's Rules.
So probably the basics start with a quorum. What consists of a quorum for your board? And then how that proceeds. So most boards, and you'll need to check your bylaws, but most boards are a quorum of 50%, meaning more than half of your board members need to be present for the meeting to occur. So you need to know that if it's a 50% or a majority, or sometimes it could be even a 3/4 majority. So looking at what your board requires of a quorum is important to know when to have the meeting, like when you can officially be in a meeting, and then how many votes you need for something to pass.
I was reading a charter and it was 2/3 was their quorum. And it was really interesting because I thought, I don't know that I would know what my quorum definition is. So that's something good to look into because it's not necessarily a simple majority.
And one thing that's really interesting is like the State Board of Education, their quorum is at 8. So they have to have 8 board members to hold their meeting. But for a motion to pass, it isn't just like if you have 8 board members present that 5 of them vote for the motion, you still have to have the 8 votes. So they define quorum as a majority of their 15-member body at 8, and then it requires that 8 for every motion to pass. Where the board I sit on, we have 6 board members, and we require a majority to hold the meeting, so 4. And then our voting is a majority of those in attendance. So if we only had 4, then we would only need 3 votes to have a motion pass.
Oh, that's interesting. So if in a situation where someone abstains from a vote, then that would affect, you know, depending on the membership there, that would affect how, if that vote could even be taken.
Yeah.
Or if the vote would count.
Yeah. So if you have 8 board members at the State Board of Education in attendance and one person abstains, then even if everybody votes yes, the motion can't pass.
Oh, wow. Well, there you, I just learned something too. There you go. All right. What are some other basic rules?
I think they just provide that pattern of formality as to how a motion is made and then how discussion to that motion happens. I think one thing that's really important in Robert's Rules is that all comments by the body, so all of the board members, need to be made directly to the chair, not to each other.
Why do you think that's important?
I think it's important in larger bodies because then it allows that chair to guide the discussion and you don't have two board members monopolizing and having a discussion almost just between themselves in the board meeting.
Yeah, it definitely can keep the decorum in the meeting.
Yeah. Another thing I really like about Robert's Rules is no one should speak a second time until everybody's had an opportunity to speak. So all members of the board have spoken before somebody starts a second comment.
Well, and that really puts the onus on the board chair to, number one, know the rules, and two, to enforce them and keep track of what's going on.
Yeah. And then it's really important, too, that if we're always directing our conversation back or comments to the chair, that puts us in a spot where we're not interrupting each other's thoughts because that conversation flows back to the chair.
That's a great point. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you can't address something that another board member said. You just do that through the chair.
Right. And Robert's Rules doesn't mean we're all going to agree on everything 100%. We're going to be like little clones sitting at a board table. But it allows us the opportunity and the decorum of being courteous and respectful to each other, even in our disagreements.
So in Robert's Rules, I did notice that often a motion will be needing to be made before a discussion takes place. Is that always necessary?
So in a big body, that is always the case, that a motion is made and then there's discussion. Some charter schools have adopted Robert's Rules for small boards, which allows you to have the discussion and then the motion. And if you've adopted the small board rules, you also don't need a second. So if you're operating under small boards rules, then the big differences are you don't need a second on your motion and you have your discussion prior to your motion. Typically, the order would be that the item on the agenda comes up, the board announces it, and then a motion is made, and then there's discussion where each board member has the opportunity to speak once, and then if there's still time allowed and the chair facilitates it, can have a second comment, and then the board chair restates the motion, and then the vote is taken.
It's nice to lay it out that way. How does a board determine what level of Robert's Rules to follow?
I think it's really important for a board to actually put their Robert's Rules that they're following, like in a condensed form, right on the back of their agenda. So anybody that attends their board meeting can easily reference how this board functions, what their rules are, if they're going to have discussion and then the motion, if they're going to have the motion and then the discussion, and then if the second is needed. It just allows everybody in attendance to also see how the meeting should flow.
And I think especially for members of the public who may not be familiar with this pattern of formality, they can kind of understand the pattern. And I know for me personally, when I've attended meetings that have Robert's Rules, I at first was so confused, but then I was very grateful for it because it really did kind of control the crazy.
I mean, it does.
And this was at a state convention level caucus where those rules, you are so grateful for them, and those people that know them backwards and forwards.
Yeah, when you start going to those state party conventions, they really play into the rules and the pattern of formality. And there are some really fun motions that can be made in those big meetings or even in your small school board meetings.
Well, let's talk about some of the motions and some of the rules that we can use. What have you found is very helpful to use?
So typically, a person making a motion will always start with "I move." So that signifies the motion. And then oftentimes as the discussion rolls out, then somebody might want to change the motion. So then you'll have a motion that will start with, "I move to amend the motion." That's probably what we see the most common in a board is the motion to move and the motion to amend.
And like you said, for the most part, those do need a second. I mean, I haven't been in any board meeting I've seen where they have adopted a small rule and don't need a second for that.
Yeah, most schools across the state utilize still the second.
Okay, that's good to know. So then after that, you know, motion to amend, how does it work? Do you have to then accept the amendment first? I mean, there's so many layers to this.
Yeah, so the person that makes the motion originally would then accept the amendment or not accept the amendment. and then there can be discussion, and then the chair will call for the vote. And so if there's an amendment made, and they usually will then vote on the amendment, and then they will vote on the motion with the amendment.
Okay, so it does require both votes mm-hmm. to accept the change and then to accept the motion with the change, which seems like the same thing. But it's just tracing back that formal process to make something happen.
And it makes it really transparent to the public, that they can see what the motion was, they can see the discussion surrounding the motion, the changing of thought, or somebody else's a differentiated point of view that makes a change to it, then the policy accepting the change, and then accepting the whole motion.
It's good to show that.
So I like in a board to use refer to committee. I like that as a motion. That's really helpful to utilize when the discussion starts to go really long and it becomes very clear at the meeting that more information is needed. So if you can refer it back to committee to gather that information and then bring it back to the board, that simplifies the length of a board meeting.
Well, and I think too, that points out very clearly to the committee, hey, this needs to happen there. This wasn't ready to bring to the board. And that's also shows the importance of committees too.
Yeah. Another one we'll see is a point of information. And you'll utilize that when you're wanting more information or clarification. So if the conversation starts to wane a little bit and you're unclear what's going on, you can ask for a point of information.
I've seen that where sometimes the commentary regarding a motion will go so long or the motion is kind of complex that at some point somebody goes, hold on. What are we talking about now? Because, you know, sometimes those conversations can veer. And again, that's where your board chair really has to take good notes. And especially in those complex motions, you know, try to write down word for word just for the person making the motion, just so that it's very clear what we're talking about.
And then if you're on one of those boards that tends to ramble, two really important Roberts rules that are really helpful is the call the question. This is when we're 40 minutes into the discussion on the motion and it's time to vote. When you call the question, you're saying, hey, it is time to vote, that we have discussed this at extensive length. Or you might use an order of the day if your board has gotten off topic and they've abandoned the agenda and are down a rabbit hole of something that was similar but is really not related to the motion. So then you would make the motion to the order of the day, meaning let's go back to the agenda.
Who can make those motions?
Those can be made by anybody at the table.
Okay, so any of the board members.
Yeah.
Not the public, though.
Right. That's why at the table is referred to those that are the board members.
Just the board members. Okay. But that is really helpful to know, especially if the discussion for some reason has gotten away from the chair and the chair is not necessarily bringing it back or feels like they just want to give everybody three or four chances to speak. It's like, no, we've hashed this out enough. Let's vote. Let's figure this out.
There's another motion that's really popular and all bodies will use it at some point, but it actually isn't part of Robert's rules.
What's that?
And that is the table motion, the motion to put something on the table or to table an item, meaning we're going to come back to it later. So that is a commonly accepted motion, meaning we'll discuss it later in the meeting or at a future date, but it actually wasn't included in Robert's original rules.
Oh, interesting. So that is something we can use, though.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And do you have to signify when you ask to table the motion, do you say, oh, I want to table it for later in the meeting, or I want to table it to a future date, or just if we can get to it in the agenda in the amount of time?
So most people will put it on the table, say, I move to table it, and then that means it can be brought off the table later in the meeting. You could say, I move to bring this off of the table, or if you're just going to put it on a future agenda, then you wouldn't have to bring it off the table. It would just be on the agenda at a future meeting.
Oh, so that's good for the secretary to know. Make sure that you notice that it's going to be on an upcoming agenda.
Right. And it doesn't have to be your very next meeting. It could be at a future date, but it can just be on the agenda.
Okay.
So it kind of like if you put it on the table, it can come back in that meeting. And then if it doesn't come back on that meeting, it'll just resurface on an agenda at a future date.
Okay.
Now there's one Roberts rules I wish that our legislators would use a little bit more often.
What's that?
And that's the postpone indefinitely. When we're just not going to hear this, just to have a motion to postpone it indefinitely, meaning we're not going to bring it back in that meeting or any future meeting.
So give me an example of that.
Maybe in transparency and education and some of the rules we've seen up at the legislature this session, those should be postponed indefinitely. There's a couple motions that actually don't need a vote.
Okay, let's go over those.
But the motion to adjourn does not need a second and technically doesn't need a vote.
Someone just has to motion to adjourn.
Well, okay, let me back up.
But you can't adjourn. You can't motion to adjourn in the middle of a meeting if you don't like the way the discussion's going.
So you can make a motion in the middle of a meeting to adjourn if you don't like the way the discussion's going, and that would need a vote.
Because you haven't hit the end of your agenda.
Right, but if you hit the end of your agenda, you can make a motion to adjourn, and the meeting is just over.
All right, and I think a lot of people don't use that. They always ask for a second, and a lot won't do a vote, but... That's good to know.
I have a member that sits on the board with me, and that's his favorite motion to make. And he makes it every board meeting. He gets to the end, and he is so excited, and he moves to adjourn.
That's his motion. Let's talk about how Robert's rules actually can help set the agenda.
So Robert's rules, often we think of it's just the rules on how to make a motion, but it also has the fixed order of business or how your agenda should be created. So most agendas will have a call to order, a roll call, a reading of the minutes, an officer's report, committee's report, and then actionable items, announcements, and an adjournment. And it should always follow that same format.
I love that. And that's what we have taken the order of a board structure and the setting up the board agenda, which we did a podcast about previously. So hopefully that will tie that in with you. That's where it came from. Because in order to be efficient, it is helpful to know what you're supposed to be doing.
And over time, we've modified that a little bit. About half of the meetings you go to, they'll actually do a reading of the minutes where they read through the minutes of the last meeting. But it's common practice nowadays to just have a motion to approve the minutes without everybody reading, because they make the assumption that all the board members had the minutes ahead of time and could read them.
And that can be something on the consent calendar, which we also talked about, to save some time with that. Because Robert's rules really are to help us also save time and be efficient. So is interrupting allowed with Robert's rules?
No, we've got to follow that pattern of formality, and we should be acknowledged by the chair. And if you want to get technical, we had a chair on the board I served at that thought we should call her Madam Chair. And that's actually part of the official formalities of Robert's rules, is to have the chair title. But we don't tend to be that formal in society these days.
That's true. In using titles, I do think that it does provide a little bit of professionalism and structure into that board meeting. And it also can make it seem less personal, I guess, which is good to kind of remove some of that, you know, personal emotion in addressing other board members.
I think it keeps emotions at a more even keel as well.
Definitely. So one thing I think that's worth noting is in Robert's rules is the abstention of votes. And so in what situation would someone abstain from a vote?
So you should abstain from a vote if you have a conflict of interest, or if maybe you don't have enough information to vote. But oftentimes we see it almost as a chicken vote in Utah, where instead of like saying, I'm voting no and owning your no, people just say, oh, I'm going to abstain. And then they can like, oh, I didn't vote against it. I abstained. And they think there's a difference. But at the end of the day, an abstention or a no vote still has the same result of no. You needed enough votes to have a yes to pass it. So I really believe board members should own their votes. You should be voting yes or no. And then if you have a conflict of interest, then you may abstain. But just because you don't want to go on record as a no really isn't a reason to abstain.
Does Robert's Rules of Order allow for any mistakes or any problems?
Yeah. So if there's a problem going on, then you can do a point of order, and that will then bring the meeting back on track and allow everybody to back up and say, oh, we got off track. We're not quite where we're supposed to be. We're going to back up and do this again appropriately.
So that could apply if the vote was taken incorrectly or if they didn't pass the amendment before they passed the motion, that kind of thing.
Yeah. It kind of allows for a little bit of a do-over or a redo.
Yeah, I think that's great. So because it does seem so formal and so set in stone, and it's just it's a lot to take in when you're trying to set a good meeting.
And I think that formality is because it is a meeting. It's a meeting where business is to be conducted. It's not a group of people getting together to discuss ideas.
That's what your committees are for. Hash it out in the committees, then bring forward your good proposals in the board meeting, and we go from there.
Yeah, then you can have actionable results and propel this charter school forward.
Yeah, that's where the board meetings are, where things get done.
Yes.
But everybody has to see what's getting done.
And there's no award for the longest board meeting. Most boards get highly ineffective after about 90 minutes. So really, rules of order allow us to conduct that business of the board in a concise timeline and be very effective and efficient.
Excellent point. So to that point, we will wrap up our Robert's Rules discussion. I think we've covered all the things that are going to be important in your charter school board meeting. And for more information, you can look at the show notes here. Also check out robertsrules.org and rulesonline.com. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to myself or Joylyn. We also have a lot of resources at the UAPCS Resource Library, including a PowerPoint that summarizes some of our thoughts on today's discussion. So good luck implementing Robert's Rules, and we hope that your board meetings run smoothly.
Move to adjourn.
Thanks for listening in today. The Utah Association of Public Charter Schools is a nonprofit organization that provides training, advocacy, and technical support to promote excellence in Utah's public charter schools. Learn more about us on our website at utahcharters.org.